Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 10, The Battle Between the Demigods and Demons.
Tesham
Paraghata
Ruttahanga
Churnitat
Ayodhana
Ubana
Uttita
Tada
Renu
Nisha
Kam
Jumanim
Cha
Chalayan
Nyavartata
Asrik
Shuddhipi
Pariplutat
Tesham Padagata Ratanga Churnita
Tesham Padagata Ratanga Churnita
Ayodhanat Obana Uttitastara
Ayodhanat Obana Uttitastara
Renur Dishakam Jumanim Chacharayan
Renur Dishakam Jumanim Chacharayan
Nyavartatasrik Shuddhipi Nyavartatas rikshuti bi pariplutat
Nyavartatas rikshuti bi pariplutat
Tesham padagata ratanga churnitat
Tesham padagata ratanga churnitat
Ayodhanat ulbana uttitastada
Ayodhanat ulbana
uttitastada Renur dishakam jumanim chacharayan Navartatas Rikshuti Pipari Pluta
I will start the translations back where we left off. Surrounding Lord Indra, King of Heaven, were the demigods, seated on various types of vehicles and decorated with flags and weapons. Present among them were Vayu, Agni, Varuna, and other rulers of various planets, along with their associates. The demigods and demons came before each other and reproached one another with words piercing to the heart. Then they drew near and began fighting face to face in pairs. O King, Maharaj Bali fought with Indra, Kartikeya with Taraka, Varuna with Haiti and Mitsa with Prahaiti. Yamaraj fought with Kalanaba, Vishvakarma with Mayadhanava, Twashta with Shambhara, and the sun god with Virochana. The demigod Aparajita fought with Namuchi, and the two Ashwini Kumar brothers fought with Vrishaparva. The sun god fought with the 100 sons of Maharaj Bali, headed by Bana. And the moon god fought with Rahu. The demigod controlling the air fought with Puloma. And Shumba and Nishumba fought the supremely powerful material energy, Durga Devi, who is called Bhadrakali. O Maharaj Pritchett, suppressor of enemies, Arindama. Lord Shiva fought with Jambha. And Vibhavasu fought with Mahiyasura. Ilvala, along with his brother Vatapi, fought the sons of Lord Brahma. Durmarsha fought with Cupid. The demon Utkala with the Matrika demigoddesses. Brihaspati with Shukracharya. And Shanaishara, Saturn, with Narakasura. The Maruts fought Nivatakavacha. The Vasus fought the Kalakeya demons. The Vishvadev demigods fought the Pauloma demons. And the Rudras fought the Krodavasha demons, who were victims of anger. All these demigods and demons assembled on the battlefield with a fighting spirit and attacked one another with great strength. all of them desiring victory, they fought in pairs, hitting one another severely with sharpened arrows, swords, and lances. They severed one another's heads using weapons like bhushundis, chakras, clubs, rishtis, patishas, shaktis, ulmukas, prasas, parashvadas, nishtrimsas, lances, parigas, mudgadas, and bindipalas. The elephants, horses, chariots, charioteers, infantry soldiers, and various kinds of carriers, along with their riders, were slashed to pieces. The arms, thighs, necks, and legs of the soldiers were severed, and their flags, bows, armor, and armaments were torn apart. Because of the impact of the ground, because of the impact on the ground of the legs of the demons and demigods and the wheels of the chariots, particles of dust flew violently into the sky and made a dust cloud that covered all directions of outer space as far as the sun. But when the particles of dust were followed by drops of blood being sprinkled all over space, the dust cloud could no longer float in the sky. Purport. The cloud of dust covered the entire horizon, but when drops of blood sprayed up as far as the sun, the dust cloud could no longer float in the sky. A point to be observed here is that although the blood is stated to have reached the sun, it is not said to have reached the moon. Apparently, therefore, as stated elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, the sun, not the moon, is the planet nearest the earth. We have already discussed this point in many places. The sun is first, then the moon, then Mars, Jupiter, and so on. The sun is supposed to be 93 million miles above the surface of the earth. And from the Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that the moon is 1,600,000 miles above the sun. Therefore, the distance between the earth and moon would be about 95 million miles. So if a space capsule were traveling at the speed of 18,000 miles per hour, how could it reach the moon in 4 days? At that speed, going to the moon would take at least 7 months. That a space capsule on a moon excursion has reached the moon in 4 days is therefore impossible. Om Gyanachamanandasya Gyananjanasalaka Chakshun Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Well, today we have some very interesting points to discuss. Amidst this fierce battle, which apparently is taking in all the topmost demons and demigods of the universe. You even have ladies fighting. Who are they? We had it here. Some kind of demigoddesses. Oh, the Matrika demigoddesses. And you also had... No, that's... when you change where you put the accent mark in Sanskrit, it goes from Taraka, the gopi, to Taraka, the demon. Gopis and Goloka Vrindavan don't fight in demigod demon wars. So you also have Brahmins fighting. Brihaspati is fighting Shukracharya. And you have sons of Lord Brahma. You have major demigods like Vayu, Varuna, Agni. Of course, you've got Indra riding on Airavata, his elephant. And you've got the commander of the demons, Maharaj Bali. So, this is... Yamaraj is fighting also. The sun god is fighting. This is taking... Even Durga Devi's in action. So, this fight is taking... It's involving the major personalities of the universe, both divine and demoniac. Everything starts from a person. Krishna is the supreme person, not matter is the supreme. Material education means you will understand how matter is the supreme. ridiculous proposition. And Srimad Bhagavatam will teach you that the cause of all causes is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead emanates this material world, not only the matter, but also the living entities within this world. Now, there are some living entities who, at the beginning of the cosmos, their job is to populate the universe. It's not that the cosmos only has one beginning. Bhuta bhutpa paliyate, Krishna explains in the Gita. This universe is created and annihilated again and again. So every time the universe is emanated, somebody has to populate it. So this task is given to the Prajapatis. Their job is to populate the universe with all types of living entities. These Prajapatis are powerful demigods, and they can give birth not only to demigods or human beings, they can give birth to all species of life. Just because you can only give birth to human beings doesn't mean that other procreators have that same limitation. So, the demons and the demigods come into this world from the same Prajapati. Kashyapa Muni. Kashyapa Muni, he's a powerful Brahmana, Deva, far more powerful entity than what we can consider. And he has several wives. One of them is Aditi, the other is Diti. So, by Kashyapa Muni's combination with Aditi, the demigods come about, the Adityas, sons of Aditi. And by the combination between Kashyapa and Diti, the demons or Daityas come about. It is stated in the Bhagavatam, third canto, how Diti, the mother of the demons, overwhelmed Kashyapa and forced him to have sexual relations outside of the regular principles. And therefore, demons took advantage of that inauspicious conception to take birth from Diti's womb, showing graphically the power of householders to influence the whole world by their activities. Responsible household life means to consider the quality of the population that should ensue. And irresponsible household life means to not understand the significance of one's activities and to just indulge whimsically and in that way cause havoc in the world. This is a very interesting point, how the problems of the world can be traced to inauspicious reproduction. No one wants to take responsibility for that, though. All the problems of the world can be cleaned up simply if the householders conceive under auspicious circumstances. Then you'll have a higher quality of population. But no one's going to do that. They'd rather spend billions of dollars trying to rehabilitate people, billions of dollars on military armaments trying to keep peace amidst such warring, violent entities. No one understands that simply by establishing good householders who will then conceive in Krishna consciousness, you will get a highly improved population. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Vrudo Bhuteshu Kamosmi Bharatarshava. I am reproduction according to Dharma. Now you have the universe populated with demigods and demons, and they're fighting. Because the demons are envious. The demigods got all the nectar. We didn't get it. We worked so hard, side by side with them, and we didn't get the fruits of the action. They got it all. Therefore, we're going to attack them. So now they're having this fierce battle. Remember when we were reading the verses about all the opulences and wealth that these soldiers on both sides were flashing? Jewels and beautiful chariots, decorated animals. It didn't sound like a battle as we know it. It sounded like some kind of gorgeous palatial scene at some royal palace. with wealth far beyond our imagination. But no, they're going to battle. But then what happens once the battle starts? Let's see if we can... Yes, remember those verses? Their chariots had canopies, colorful flags, umbrellas with handles made of valuable jewels and pearls, fans made of peacock feathers, beautiful upper and lower garments, their shields and ornaments and swords dazzling in the sunlight, their beautiful clothes waving in the breeze. And you heard about Marge Bully's airplane chariot, which was inconceivable and indescribable. He appeared like the moon rising in the evening, illuminating all directions. And then there's Indra. He's riding on his elephant, which can go anywhere. So there's the beautiful scene before the fighting starts. This is the nature of the material world. Even on the higher planets, beauty cannot last. Once the battle starts, everything becomes hideous and horrible. So therefore you heard about severed limbs, chopped off heads, and all the flags, bows, armor, and ornaments are torn apart. This is life in this world. What begins as beautiful ends as hideous. Just like this body. When you look in the mirror in the morning, whether you're putting on tilak or makeup or whatever, you think, oh, it's my body. But this same body that you're appreciating, it'll cause you so much pain, you'll curse having it. The same body which looks nice to you. You know, you look in the mirror, you think, well, I mean, I'm not the most beautiful, but, you know, in my own way, yeah, I'm kind of attractive, I'm sure people would agree. When you look in the mirror and think that, you should understand, this same body that you're appreciating will become grotesque. The same body. So then you ask yourself, why do I have these feelings of appreciating the temporary beauty of this body? What did Narada Muni say in reference to the two sons of Kubera who were sporting drunkenly and nakedly in the Manasaganga River with the young ladies? After Narada Muni went, while he was cursing them, he pointed out, what's the point in becoming so proud about your body? What is its destination? Krimi vid bhasma. Ashes, stool, and what's the other one? Ashes, stool, and worms. Yes, that's the destination of your body. If you burn it, like civilized people do, they burn a dead body so that the spirit soul doesn't remain attached to it but goes on to the next body. If you burn the body, then the result is ashes. So you can look in the mirror and think, it's going to become ashes. Or worms. If you bury the body, like uncivilized people do, then the worms will eat the body. So your body simply will become food for worms. And if you just leave the body on the ground, yeah, maybe someone has killed you, or you died in a lonely place. Sometimes in India you can just see dead bodies lying on the ground. Of course, sooner or later someone will scoop them up and burn the bodies. But in other parts of the world, I've seen Africa, I've seen just somebody collapse dead in the middle of the street. The body just lays there. Then probably some wild dogs will come and eat the body. So then what is the destination of the body? It becomes the stool passed by the dogs that eat it. This is Narada Muni's observation. He's not trying to gross you out. He's trying to give you vision and understanding. It's a good meditation while you're dressing and, you know, think, well, it's either going to be ashes, worms, or stool. That's part of Krishna consciousness. Not the only part, but it is part. It is a major part. to understand the full picture of reality. Of course, the other part is that even though the body is temporary, it has value. Who says that? Who said that even though the body is temporary, it has value? So therefore, from the very beginning of life, you should practice Krishna consciousness. Who said that? You don't know? That's right. You get a gold star today. And a special Ekadasi cookie. Koma Atret Pragya Dharman Bhagavadanaha Durlabha Manasam Janma Tarapya Dhruva Martatam. Although the body is adruva, temporary, it still has artha, value. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj, he's telling his 5-year-old school friends, don't simply be frivolous and waste your life. Start now, at such a young age, to be Krishna conscious. Because even though the human body has, even though it's temporary, it gives great value if you use it to understand Bhagavad Dharma. Therefore, Komara Acharit Pravya, from the very beginning of life, from the Kumar stage, practice Krishna consciousness. So that's the full picture. So we can, Krishna consciousness is so deep, you have so many angles to meditate on and fill your consciousness with. Alright. So we have discussed how all the flashy opulence, the jeweled decorations, the beautiful looking soldiers are now, that whole scene has turned hideous. As the battle has begun, and everyone is chopping each other to pieces. And what about the blood? First, there's a dust cloud that goes high into outer space, covering all directions as far as the sun. But does it remain a dust cloud for long, floating in the sky? No. What happens? You see, the dust comes from all the chariots and the legs of the soldiers stirring up the dust on the ground. It goes into the air and forms a big cloud. But that dust cloud doesn't float for long because soon particles of blood, drops of blood, are shooting all over the sky. And they're joining the dust in the cloud and then weighing the dust down so the dust cloud can't float anymore. A very graphic description of the battle scene. All right. As we pointed out, what starts out beautiful in this material cosmos ends in destruction. Even the higher planets are subject to destruction. Therefore, every major religion of the world urges you, do not simply concentrate on the temporary. You must think of the permanent. All the major prophets taught that. Jesus, Buddha. That is the message of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is the supreme prophet from whom all prophets emanate. He says the same thing. Why are you busy struggling to maintain your temporary body when it's going to meet with destruction, no matter how gorgeous that body is? One thing I always wondered, maybe I mentioned, you know how when someone is a famous movie star, their pictures are flashed everywhere? What about when they're old? Why don't you see pictures of old movie stars? I'd love to see like a special photo book of old movie stars. That would be the reality. Take someone who was a famous, stunning cinema beauty when you were 8 years old. Now ask to see pictures of that same person. That's the reality that we should be educated in. But no, as soon as they become old and gray, you never see pictures of them anymore. Instead, they flash the new ones at you. But if they're going to be real, if they're going to be fair, they should show everything, the beginning and the end. But material life is not fair. It's meant to delude you. Therefore, how can you learn by experience when you're dealing with an energy that's meant to delude you? Taking up the Krishna conscious process seriously means an attempt to escape delusion. No one wants to be deluded. That means you have to work hard to regain your sanity. So the Krishna conscious community is meant to provide facility for people to regain their sanity, to escape delusion. It's not just an informal clubhouse you know, where you just kind of, you know, have your spiritual version of a social club. Social relations are necessary, of course. But the social relations should be founded upon inspiring one another to escape delusion, not just to pass the time. I've noticed here in Perth that it's a little like New Zealand. I was telling Moni Bundy yesterday, in Kiwi Loka, the New Zealanders, they have to have lots of space around them. You know, and you can't, like, penetrate that space immediately. They, you know, they're like islands, and everyone has a batch or outdoor cottage, I don't know what you call them here, holiday home, in their own mind, and you can't get too close, except you have to go through elaborate rituals and procedures. I noticed in Perth it's like that. Not as severe, but it's like that a bit. That everyone has their own realm and, you know, don't cross the front fence too quickly. Yeah. I notice it's like that amongst the devotees. I mean, everybody's got their, you know, little scene. And, you know, to a certain extent everybody relates, but there's always the fence there. And whereas in other parts of Australia, it's not like that. Based on time, place, and circumstance, we need to figure out a way that we can increase the social relations based on helping one another to go back to Godhead. But you don't want to threaten everybody. Hey, who told you to come and preach to me? Are you trying to imply that I'm having problems? Is that why you showed up? If I listen to you, the other devotees will think that I'm having problems. Do you think I need help? Are you trying to imply that I need help? Hey, I've been around here 4 or 5 years, you know. I know the ropes. I know the scene. You know, I come to the temple from time to time, you know, say Hari Bol, and I go back to my world. Yeah. That ain't just that. So, how can we increase social relations based on helping one another spiritually? That will be a great challenge. We should understand both the negative features of the material body and the positive use. Even though something is temporary, it can have a perfect use. This body can be used as a device to free you from illusion, even though the body is part of illusion. This is known as Yukta Vairagya, as taught by Rupa Goswami. Real renunciation. Engage everything in Krishna's service, and then even the temporary, even the unreal, becomes real by its use. All right. Now, what about the last point? It's very interesting. So, well, actually, there's one more point we can discuss before we get to the moon. That last sentence of the purport. That a space capsule on a moon excursion has reached the moon in 4 days is therefore impossible. Ooh, do you have to accept this in order to be a Hari? What do you think, Ty? But you don't want to tell your family about it, right? You don't repeat that at your work, right? There was a time some decades ago when, you know, it was known amongst the news media that the Haris don't believe there was a moon landing, and so whenever you would meet a news reporter, that's the first thing they would ask you. We've heard that you don't believe there was a moon landing, you know. Can you tell us about it? This way they wanted to kind of create a story, because everybody knows, you know, that such a thing happened. So the Haris don't believe it. All right. We'll get to that point. But before discussing that, we'd like to discuss piercing words. Unfortunately, sometimes our devotees specialize in that art. No one here, of course. I'm talking about other temples, other cities. All these demigods and demons assembled on the battlefield with a fighting spirit and attack one another. No, that's not the verse. Excuse me. Okay. The demigods and demons came before each other and reproached one another with words piercing to the heart. Then they drew near and began fighting face to face in pairs. So this is the art of warfare, that before you physically fight, you fight with words. And evidently, the warriors are expert not only in weapons, but also using words. Everything on the battlefield is meant to contribute to the desired effect. That's why they play the conch shells to enliven the soldiers. Prabhupada compares it to like the British in the old days of war. In the early 20th century, they would have what, the bagpipes and like that, playing the tunes. Do they have that in Australia too? It's military bands. So it's supposed to enliven the soldiers, you know, as they march to die. So the Vedic equivalent is the conch shell. The soldiers on each side feel enlivened when they hear their generals blowing the conches. Then, after the conch sounds, as the soldiers near each other, it's time for the piercing words. And it's interesting that even though these are big demigods and demons, they are able to pierce each other's hearts with words. I wonder what they're saying. Because, you know, to pierce someone's heart with the words, you've got to really say something quite devastating. Otherwise, you know, no one cares. But to actually pierce their heart, you've got to say something personal. I think you have to say something personal. So, obviously, the demigods and demons, it seems, knew the right personal things to say to pierce the other's hearts. If it's not personal, you really don't care. And then they began drawing near and fighting face to face. We have to be careful about the power of words. Sometimes devotees speak too loosely and without consideration and say things that cause other devotees to grieve for many weeks. And these piercing words rattle around in your mind actually for years. It's a shame. You know. And you tell it to your circle of confidence. Did you know what that devotee said to me 5 years ago? 10 years ago. And these things just rattle around in your consciousness. And so much turbulence in temples and yatras can be caused just by loose words. Words spoken without consideration. Words spoken in anger. Sometimes there are, because everything is based on social interaction, and because in Krishna consciousness you meet people who materially you never associate with, but for the purpose of spiritual realization you're associating with them, sometimes it can be a little inconvenience. Like the Bengali proverb, if there's a bunch of kitchen utensils rattling together, there's going to be a little noise. Or, more specifically, if you have a cart pulled by an ox, and on the cart there are clay jugs of water, naturally, as the cart's moving forward, the jugs are going to push against each other a little bit and make a little noise. The main thing is, though, the cart's moving forward. So even you may have a progressive temple, a progressive yatra, but still there's always a little hubbub, because that's the way it is. Well, sometimes devotees have disagreements about how to serve Krishna. Sometimes they don't feel appreciated. And there can be hurt feelings. And then when the hurt feelings combine with exchanges of piercing words, oh, that's a very deadly combination. Because everything in bhakti is voluntary. Even if there's somebody who's getting a salary, it's nothing like they'd be getting in the material world. So the main reason why devotees are doing things is because they want to render service. It's a voluntary expression of their heart. Did you know that even in the material world, What do employees say is their number one motivation? It's not salary. It's not position. The number one motivation for mundane employees is to get appreciation. Similarly, our devotees want to be appreciated. But when they get angry with each other and they speak piercing words, this causes problems for many years because it's very difficult to forget. Especially since, from the material point of view, you wouldn't be hanging around with these types of persons. Everybody knows that. Nittai Prem, from the material point of view, he wouldn't be here in Perth, you know, associating, you know, with all these kinds of people. Yeah. He'd be on the bank of the Ganges saying, Hari Hari Bol. Kendra would be in Texas, sleeping in a hammock on his front porch. Moni Bandha would be back in South Australia and doing whatever they do there. So, from the material point of view, there's no way you'd associate with these types of people. Stoka Krishna would be back in Vladivostok or somewhere like that, you know. I'd be back in New York. Yeah. With all the New Yorkers who think they're the lords of the universe. But for Krishna's service, we've come together. And we are rubbing shoulders with persons who are materially different from us. I mean, when I think about it, you know, from the material point of view, yeah. From the material point of view, not speaking spiritually, yeah. What's a New Yorker doing hanging out with someone from South Australia? Total, complete opposite. But for Krishna's service, these material differences fade away because we're focusing on the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But sometimes there are disagreements. And when devotees are not careful and they say things just because they're feeling something at the moment, those inconsiderate words can linger for many years. Especially when you don't make any effort to counteract your inconsiderate behavior. You don't try to make amends in any kind of way. Then gradually the temple community fills up with all these memories and grievances and this is and that. It's like a water tank. It just fills up. Everybody's got something on everybody else. 5 years ago he said that to me. 10 years ago she did that to me. And it just, you know, the tank just fills up. And that impedes proper Vaishnav relations. So the first thing is that we should not use piercing words. The second thing is, if unfortunately it happens, you should try to make amends. Because the piercing words and their effect impede Krishna's service. People get discouraged. They can't get it out of their heart. Even if they try, it's like an arrow in their heart. They try to pull it out and the arrow just twists and turns and hurts the heart even more as they try to pull it out. So, we should remember what Krishna explains in the 17th chapter of the Gita about austerity of the tongue. What does the Lord say? Anudvega kayam vakya satyam priya hitam jaya swajaya vyasanam chaiva vanmayam tapa uchate. Austerity of the tongue consists in not speaking words that agitate others. Satyam priyahitam chaya. Speak words that are truthful. Priyam, words that are endearing. Hitam, that are beneficial. And swajayam vyasanam. Your words should be based on shastra. So if you always think about that, you'll be able to control the tongue, which is the most difficult sense to control. As soon as you get angry, you know, that tongue likes to lash out. But if you learn to control it, then the devotional community can remain in peace. But as soon as you lash out with the tongue without consideration and you pierce a devotee's heart, great agony is caused and a reduction in devotional service is caused. Okay, sometimes it may happen, unfortunately. So then you have to do something to counteract it. That's the responsibility of living in a devotional community, to control your tongue, and if somehow or other, you know, the tongue gets out of control, then do something to counteract the damage. An easy thing to do is to always think how you can appreciate others. In Mayapur at the GBC meetings, we had a very nice exercise introduced to us by Anuttama Prabhu, a minister of communications. He had everybody go around the room and say something to somebody else that they appreciated. And you could either say something back if you wanted or just say, "Thank you, Prabhu." But you didn't have to resort to the stock responses of, "Oh, I'm just lowest of the lowest," or "I'm just a nonsense." You know, you didn't have to worry about that. You just said, "Thank you, Prabhu." Just "Thank you, Prabhu," like that. So it was a quite amazing experience, for me anyway. Because when you start thinking about it, devotees, every devotee is so wonderful, you can say something. Maybe you should try that here. Catch everybody by surprise at one big, you know, feast day when everybody comes. Say, "Okay, before we take the prasad, everyone should go around to everyone and say something that you appreciate." If you put your heart into it, it's a very powerful thing. Go up to Stoka Krishna and say, "I really appreciate how you add to the kirtans in such a way." Now, you might think it's a small thing, but the person is touched. Because we are devotees. We're not doing it on the material plane. Go to Nittai Brahm. "I really appreciate how you began your Krishna consciousness at such a young age, and you're still sticking with it." Go up to Moni Banda's daughter and say, "What wonderful parents you have. And how you're such an obedient daughter." You'll see a great change. It's a very wonderful exercise. I was very amazed. And you go up to everybody, even those you've had disputes with. Because isn't it true in Krishna consciousness, even if there's someone you've had a dispute with, still you can see there's something in them you can appreciate. These are healthy things you can try. And it certainly helps. It opens your eyes, especially by expressing it. Now, these things work amongst materialists on the mundane level. But, you know, what's the point of stirring up the ocean of Maya? But when devotees are involved, because you're actually dealing with devotees of the Lord, it's a very wonderful spiritual effect created. And you realize that you're actually appreciating the opulences of Krishna. So there's something you can try. Instead of, for example, thinking, "Oh, Tag, you know, I remember when you were a brahmachari. Why didn't you just stick to that? Why did you go out?" Instead you say, "Hey, you know, I really appreciate that. Even though you're, you know, working and you've got your own life, you're still, you know, coming to classes, you're still, you know, part of the community, and you haven't dived into abominable activities. You know, I really appreciate that." Wouldn't you feel encouraged?
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody would. You'll always find something meaningful to say. That's the amazing thing, because you're dealing with devotees. Even a struggling devotee has something amazing about his or her life. But after a while, because of familiarity in the temple, our mouths just seal shut. "I'm not saying anything, good or bad, about anyone. Just keep your mouth closed, do whatever service they make you do, and say, 'Hari Hari Bol.'" And go back to your home or go back to the ashram. But the mouths should open. We should sing the glories of the Lord, sing the glories of our fellow devotees. So it's a healthy exercise. And that will bring to mind other things you can do. Because the glories of devotees are for real. Therefore, it's not an artificial thing, because they're serving Krishna in some way. Even if they're not as fully engaged as you'd like, still, they're doing some service, and you can pick that out. Or they've done something in the past that you can appreciate. And even if they're not doing as much now, the fact that you show appreciation for what they did before, that'll be very inspiring to them. In this way, instead of worrying about not using piercing words, you can also be concerned with the positive, how to use words that encourage. As Krishna says, satyam priyahitam chaya and swajyam visanam chaiva. You speak according to the Shastra. No one can blame you for speaking according to Shastra. Just like Prabhupada, when he was using the heavy verses from Gita, where Krishna says, Namam duskritino mudha prapajante naradava. Anyone who doesn't surrender to me, Krishna says, has to be in four categories of duskritino, miscreant. So how would Prabhupada use that verse? Well, personally, I think you're a nice person. But Krishna has said mudha. What can I do? I'm just repeating the Shastra. But I may think you're nice, but Krishna says mudha by your activities. What can be done? There are ways that you all can stir the ocean of Vaishnava relations amongst you. Definitely there are ways. To break the, how should we say, break the, the deadlock. Okay, what is that deadlock? I'm not going to say anything bad, and I'm not going to say anything good either. Yeah, that's Krishna consciousness. We all become just like stones and just look at each other. Funny, well, Prabhu. You know, it's your day to do the offering. That's not very inspiring atmosphere, is it, for new people? That kind of atmosphere doesn't enliven you, does it? No. You came looking for reality, and reality is here, but sometimes we forget. Therefore, it's good from time to time to churn the devotional ocean so that everyone can see the glories that are there. All right, last point, the moon. That a space capsule on a moon excursion has reached the moon in 4 days is therefore impossible. Ooh, this sounds culty, doesn't it? Dutti, what would your brother and his wife say if you told them? I've just been initiated into this movement that believes that there was no moon landing. Yes. Everyone is so sure that materialists know what they're doing and are honest. Everyone is so sure. Well, maybe there's dishonesty by the criminals in the street, but our scientists, our political leaders, they have told us, and we saw it on television. Therefore, it had to have happened. You're never taught in Australia, for example, that 20% of Americans don't believe there was a moon landing. You never thought that. And now, when we were, Borjan Prabhu, Moni Banda, Prabhu and I were having lunch at Kendra and Seva Kunja's house, so we also watched, not on television, but I had one video CD with recordings of a primetime television show in America, which was aired twice. It was so popular. About how the moon landing was a hoax. This is on primetime television. What's that mean? Like 8 o'clock at night? Yeah, 9 o'clock at night?
Yeah.
And they had to air it twice. Fox Network, your Rupert Murdoch's network. Yes. Presenting powerful evidence that, hey, either it didn't happen or you have more than enough evidence to doubt it. Either you'll accept it didn't happen or at least you'll accept looks unlikely. No. And here Prabhupada has it in his books ages ago. This book was done in this particular eighth canto, 1976. And earlier than that, in the early 70s, I think the end of the 60s, Prabhupada was saying, impossible, it didn't happen. Now the TV shows are coming out exposing everything. There was one in the USA, and there was also one in the UK, on the BBC. But people are so covered over and dull these days, they what can they do? So you shouldn't think that these statements in the Bhagavatam are outlandish just because you saw it on TV. One movie producer, he said, yeah, you give me a big enough budget, I could make a movie about a fake moon landing. Yeah, I can go to Arizona and do it, out in the desert. Just give me enough money, you know. What's the typical budget of a blockbuster movie? Who knows? How much?
$200 million
U.S. Mm-hmm. Yes. So the director was saying, give me, you know, a sizable budget and I can do it. They had all kinds of evidence showing it didn't happen. For example, you know, the German scientist who made the cameras. Some of you remember the cameras strapped to the chests of the astronauts. You remember that? Yes, taking the pictures. Well, the German scientist who made the camera, he went on nationwide TV and said, forget it, I made that camera. It could not take such pictures. Now, what are you going to say to that? Does that sound culty to you? The scientist who made the camera says, forget it, couldn't do it. Now, what are you going to say? Oh, basic things like this. It just shows you. You put your faith in material nature, you'll always be disappointed. It is true. Better you chant Hare Krishna. You're not escaping from reality, then you are participating in reality. Points are being brought up like, how could the American flag wave on the moon when there's no breeze to blow? And they had the NASA representative defending, and he would not reply to any of the specific points. He would just say, look, everyone knows we landed on the moon. Anyone who doesn't believe it is a victim of bad science. That was his defense. So, Akendra has a copy of both shows, so. In some temples, they arrange all the devotees to see it because it's in support. It completely supports a controversial point that Prabhupada made 3 decades ago. And a point that we have been ridiculed about. And sometimes even our own devotees get embarrassed about it. Ooh, I don't know why Prabhupada said that. You know, just restrain yourself now. It's not good for the PR. It's not good for the media. Just now you find out. You know, the cat's out of the bag. Either you'll doubt it or you'll say it didn't happen. Those are your alternatives. Okay, any questions? Maybe you have to get rent some kind of projector. Oh, yeah. Anyway, it's material evidence that will set your mind at ease, because otherwise our new devotees, they read these things, even the old devotees, and, oh,
moon further away than the sun, and he didn't go to the moon.
What did you think when you first heard that Hare Krishnas don't believe we landed on the moon? You didn't hear that, huh? What did you think? He just pushed it aside. Well, anyway. Next page. Huh? Oh, you just thought maybe, maybe not, or... So now, you see this video, you'll be, oh, well, it's not very extraordinary to say that it didn't happen. And you're seeing it on television also. That's the proof. You saw the moon landing on TV, so it had to be fact. Now you're seeing the denial on television, so that has to be the fact. Shukadeva Goswami, we don't know about him. But television, yes. That's the deciding factor. All right, any questions?
Apparently the Russians landed on the moon.
No, you know what the Russians said? They're also on this show, this TV. The Russian astronauts, they interviewed a top Russian astronaut, cosmonaut. And he said, no, we never even thought about going to the moon because as everybody knows, there's this radiation belt that will kill you. Yeah. So we never even thought about it.
Same thing again,
saying that they haven't gone to the Chandra Loka. They went to Chandra Mandal.
It may become from other planetary
small planets
around the moon.
Yeah, Prabhupada has also said, if at best, maybe they landed at some place that's not familiar to them, and they call it the moon. And at worst, they never left the desert in Arizona. Because you'll see on this documentary, you'll see a picture of the moon, you know, with the crater, and then it'll show you a picture of the desert in Arizona at a top secret American Air Force base, where if you try to fly over, they shoot you down, you try to walk on it, they kill you. It's like called Area 51. Can't get near it. But you can't even fly over it to get photographs. So how did the TV show get photographs? They went to the Russians and bought Russian spy satellite photos from the old communist days. You can buy anything in Russia with the right amount of money. So with the end of the communist regime, all the top secret Russian military photos, you know, are up for sale. So the American TV went to the Russians, you know, said, hey, here's some money. Can they give us some top secret spy satellite photos of Area 51 in Arizona? Sure. How much money you got? Otherwise, no American has seen Area 51. You can't take pictures of it. Airplanes can't fly over it. You can't walk on the land. But then they got these photos, and they put it on TV. On one side was the moon landing site with the crater. On the other side was Arizona, and you couldn't tell the difference. You'll see it. Anything else?
Even something you had that's a video,
it's one of those places.
And on that,
the
officials on it
was quite amazing.
On there, they also said that they found the first
one
found an
alien
spacecraft with beings on it.
Well, I don't want to get too far. Yeah. I mean, hold on there. She's getting fired up now. Okay, we'll just stick to the subject. Okay. Doesn't take much for devotees to go soaring off, you know? Any proper questions, please? Yes.
Can you congratulations,
Stephen? Well, I hope so. Krishna knows the situation to the best you can. That's part of the austerity. You're just responsible for doing the best you can. That's all. Krishna doesn't ask that you be Lord of the universe in order to do devotional service. Do the best you can in the circumstances. That's all that's asked of you. Yes?
You're talking about how the words can change the heart, mm-hmm. and that you stay around going out of the mind for years. And you mentioned that on the side of the person who has spoken those words, that you try to do something to rectify it. But from the side of the person who is tested like that,
mm-hmm.
then the other person may not do anything. If they don't, what can you do yourself so that you can stop that?
I try to practice Rupa Goswami's six loving exchanges. You know, giving prasad, receiving prasad, giving a gift, receiving a gift, revealing the mind. That means about Krishna's service. Just any old thing is in your head. Sometimes devotees misunderstand that verse. Revealing your mind means, you know, any silly thing that comes to your head, you go reveal it to someone. No, revealing your mind about Krishna's service and your relation to it. So, if you work at it, those six loving exchanges work. But I see the problem is that we do it one time and, hey, the magic effect wasn't there. But I see if myself, if I just continuously do it, certainly it works, but you have to stick to it. You've got to work at it. But our tendency is one time, and okay, I did the loving exchange, press the button, hey, what happened? You know, not much changed. You know, the Shastra, it's full of all these glorious statements which really don't apply today. But if you stick to it, you'll see it works. If you stick to it day after day, you'll see. And part of it working is maybe you don't know how the other person's affected, but you'll see in yourself that all the complexities go. I've definitely noticed that. You'll definitely notice in yourself that you're no longer subject to that. Which, you know, is very unpleasant, isn't it? You look at somebody and... Five years ago, you tried to shaft me in my service. You know, you smile at them, you know, Hari Bol Prabhu. So the loving exchanges gets rid of that. And yes, a sincere devotee is worried about that, you know, hidden snarl. It's not nice. I mean, those are your householders. I mean, you know that this can be a great enemy of household life when husband and wife, you know, maintain grievances for many years, you know, and so someone has to help them to, you know, make the past the past. From what I've seen, not so expert due to no experience, but what I've seen, the men are notorious for just thinking, well, it was the past, what's the big deal? You know, today is today, then was then, you know. Hey. And ladies are notorious for, you know, it happened 20 years ago, I had a certain feeling, something happened today, I got the same feeling, therefore, it's all one moment, and you are guilty. And men are just amazed by this mystical ability, you know, to collapse the span of time into one singularity. It's like, 20 years ago, and today, the same thing. That's one extreme. Then the men, on the other extreme, like, well, what's the big deal? Yeah, I did it 20 years ago, but that was so long ago, and I did it again today. Completely a different situation. No relation to 20 years ago. So this is why householders need guidance from senior householders. Otherwise, these things go on and on and on and on. I could tell you one thing, but I won't. It's too embarrassing. My days prior to devotional life, but... No. Tape recorder is on. What's that? No. But it just made me realize that I'm not cut out for this kind of life. I tried to analyze the situation rationally, and that makes it worse. And so it was pointed out to me that I had completely missed the purport. I said, I can't surrender to this. It's got to be another life. Anyway, so we need a system of counseling and advice, and then we can prevent these things from getting out of hand and just, lodging in the heart for many decades, these grievances and hurts and angers. It takes work. I'll have to admit, it does take work. You've got to work at it. But if you work at it, the results are definitely there. But you've got to work at it. You can't be lazy. That's the thing. If there's some stone in your heart, you've got to work at pulling it out. Certainly, if you chant Hare Krishna with attention, yes, that takes care of everything. But taking care of everything means the Maha Mantra will let you see these impediments. And you've also got to make an effort to get them out. Hare. Well, thank you all for your kind hospitality, engaging me in Krishna service. Look forward to seeing you all again, chanting Hare Krishna with attention, enthusiastically engaging in service, and hopefully more devotees will commit themselves, come out of the, ether and out of the woodwork and come to the center of the floor and commit themselves for Krishna's service. And hopefully one day you'll be able to install your deities, because devotees have come forth and are willing to sacrifice for having Archivigra officially invited so that Krishna can reciprocate with you more. All right. All glories to the Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.